Level 2 Certificate in ESOL, Examination C1. Section 1, Listening. I am going to give you the instructions for this part of the test. You will hear this sound at the start of each piece. Remember to transfer your answers to the optical mark form before the end of the exam. Now open your question paper and look at Part 1, Section A. Listening Part 1, Section A. You will hear a conversation between Hazel Dean, a radio presenter, and Thomas Moore, a survival expert. For questions 1 to 5, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C. You will hear Section A twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section A. Part 1, Section A. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Good Afternoon Britain. Our first guest today is Thomas Moore, world-famous survival expert, who has recently returned from a trip to the South Pole. Today, he is going to provide us with some general tips on survival. Isn't that right, Thomas?
Quite right, Hazel. May I first say what a pleasure it is to be on the show. I try to listen when I can, but as you might imagine, in my life, I'm not always able to get any radio reception.
Well, we're glad you've made it here today.
Me too. Now, where was I? Well, it's very important to remember the rule of three. In a survival situation, a human being can survive 3 minutes without air, 3 hours if the body temperature is not regulated, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. If you remember this rule, you can prioritize. Clearly, nobody is going to go hunting if they cannot breathe. But if you find yourself in a desert environment, with the sun beating down on you, you don't want to spend the daylight hours searching for water. The best bet is to get into the shade, set up some kind of shelter, and go looking for water at night. 3 days without water, remember, but only 3 hours if you're overheating. Similarly, if you're in a cold climate, you don't want to waste energy keeping yourself hydrated if hypothermia is coming. You address the most pressing need first. Imagine you've fallen in a river and your clothes are wet. In those circumstances, getting warm and dry are paramount.
It's interesting you should say that, Thomas. So you think, in certain circumstances, you should try to start a fire before looking for water?
Yes, but in most cases, you should look for water as soon as possible. Certainly before you start looking for food. However, if you're in a position where your body temperature needs to be regulated, you'll have to get shelter and start a fire. If you get caught in the snow, you should dig around the roots of a tree, deep enough down so that you are totally out of the wind, and pack the snow tightly on the walls to keep you insulated.
And if your body temperature or indeed when your body temperature is regulated, then you can go looking for water. I suppose in snowy conditions that would be easy, as you can just eat the snow.
Eating snow? Preposterous! For starters, the amount of energy you would use up consuming it in its frozen state would cause a net energy loss. Also, think about all the filth that may be in a handful of snow. No. In snowy conditions, it's best to try to take snow from the branches of trees rather than the ground, and always boil it to get rid of germs. This is something you should do with all water and, if possible, filter it through a cloth.
Great. That's good advice.
Yes, it's crucial. So, as I was saying, you should use a cloth to filter out dirt, etc., if you can. Avoid standing water, as this is where mosquitoes are likely to gather. They may cause malaria or dengue fever, which could prove fatal. You may not be able to see running water, but you will probably be able to hear it. Another way to get water is to soak up dew using a cloth and wring it out, or you could tie clear plastic bags tightly over leafy branches. After a few hours, drinkable water will have condensed inside.
So, once you have some kind of shelter and access to potable water, then would be the time to start looking for food, am I right?
Yes, you can start to look for edible plants. It can be risky, though. It's a good idea to learn about plants beforehand, because some can make you very poorly, or even kill you. As for mushrooms, stay away from them. You could also search for fish, frogs, and lizards. I'd avoid trying to go for larger creatures, though. The energy involved in hunting and killing them may be more than it's worth. Again, be careful the smaller creatures you catch are not poisonous. Don't be a hero. Don't eat them raw. Don't eat the innards, and make sure they are well cooked. Overcooked is better than undercooked.
That's been most informative. I'm sure our listeners are now better prepared than they were before. But if they ever find themselves in a survival situation, what's the most important thing to remember?
Don't panic. Don't despair. Stay positive. Stay alert. You're going to have to survive until either help comes or you find a way out yourself. Attitude is crucial in these kinds of situations. Try to ensure everyone has a task. This will help to make them feel useful and keep their minds focused.
Some excellent advice there. I'm afraid that's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Thomas Moore, and now it's time for the news and the weather where you are. Now listen again. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Good Afternoon Britain. Our first guest today is Thomas Moore, world-famous survival expert, who has recently returned from a trip to the South Pole. Today, he is going to provide us with some general tips on survival. Isn't that right, Thomas?
Quite right, Hazel. May I first say what a pleasure it is to be on the show. I try to listen when I can, but as you might imagine, in my life, I'm not always able to get any radio reception.
Well, we're glad you've made it here today.
Me too. Now, where was I? Well, it's very important to remember the rule of three. In a survival situation, a human being can survive 3 minutes without air, 3 hours if the body temperature is not regulated, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. If you remember this rule, you can prioritize. Clearly, nobody is going to go hunting if they cannot breathe. But if you find yourself in a desert environment, with the sun beating down on you, you don't want to spend the daylight hours searching for water. The best bet is to get into the shade, set up some kind of shelter, and go looking for water at night. 3 days without water, remember, but only 3 hours if you're overheating. Similarly, if you're in a cold climate, you don't want to waste energy keeping yourself hydrated if hypothermia is coming. You address the most pressing need first. Imagine you've fallen in a river and your clothes are wet. In those circumstances, getting warm and dry are paramount.
It's interesting you should say that, Thomas. So you think, in certain circumstances, you should try to start a fire before looking for water?
Yes, but in most cases, you should look for water as soon as possible. Certainly before you start looking for food. However, if you're in a position where your body temperature needs to be regulated, you'll have to get shelter and start a fire. If you get caught in the snow, you should dig around the roots of a tree, deep enough down so that you are totally out of the wind, and pack the snow tightly on the walls to keep you insulated.
And if your body temperature, or indeed when your body temperature is regulated, then you can go looking for water. I suppose in snowy conditions that would be easy, as you can just eat the snow.
Eating snow? Preposterous! For starters, the amount of energy you would use up consuming it in its frozen state would cause a net energy loss. Also, think about all the filth that may be in a handful of snow. No. In snowy conditions, it's best to try to take snow from the branches of trees rather than the ground, and always boil it to get rid of germs. This is something you should do with all water and, if possible, filter it through a cloth.
Great. That's good advice.
Yes, it's crucial. So, as I was saying, you should use a cloth to filter out dirt, etc., if you can. Avoid standing water, as this is where mosquitoes are likely to gather. They may cause malaria or dengue fever, which could prove fatal. You may not be able to see running water, but you will probably be able to hear it. Another way to get water is to soak up dew using a cloth and wring it out, or you could tie clear plastic bags tightly over leafy branches. After a few hours, drinkable water will have condensed inside.
So, once you have some kind of shelter and access to potable water, then would be the time to start looking for food, am I right?
Yes, you can start to look for edible plants. It can be risky, though. It's a good idea to learn about plants beforehand because some can make you very poorly or even kill you. As for mushrooms, stay away from them. You could also search for fish, frogs, and lizards. I'd avoid trying to go for larger creatures, though. The energy involved in hunting and killing them may be more than it's worth. Again, be careful the smaller creatures you catch are not poisonous. Don't be a hero. Don't eat them raw. Don't eat the innards. And make sure they are well cooked. Overcooked is better than undercooked.
That's been most informative. I'm sure our listeners are now better prepared than they were before, but if they ever find themselves in a survival situation, what's the most important thing to remember?
Don't panic. Don't despair. Stay positive. Stay alert. You're going to have to survive until either help comes or you find a way out yourself. Attitude is crucial in these kinds of situations. Try to ensure everyone has a task. This will help to make them feel useful and keep their minds focused.
Some excellent advice there. I'm afraid that's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Thomas Moore, and now it's time for the news and the weather where you are. That is the end of Part 1, Section A of the listening test. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Listening Part 1, Section B. You will hear Hazel Dean, the radio presenter, talking to Donald Bentham about surviving a bear attack. For questions 6 to 10, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. You will hear section B twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for section B. Welcome back. We are now joined by Donald Bentham, who had a remarkable experience on holiday in the United States. We're very lucky to have him here for his first radio interview. In fact, you could say he's very lucky to be here at all. Tell us your story, Donald.
Hello, Hazel. I totally agree. I am very lucky to be here. As you said, I was holidaying in America last summer, and I was attacked by a bear.
How did you manage to get away? I can see you have a few scars on your face, but there's nothing else to show that you have been attacked by a bear.
You're right, Hazel. I was very lucky. I was walking in the forest when a black bear came straight at me. It stood up on its hind legs and tried to hit me. I assumed it was right-handed. So I ducked under its arm and punched it in the eyes and nose as hard as I could. The bear suddenly lost interest and walked away. I learnt later that this often happens if you fight a black bear. You can use stones, sticks, anything at all. If I'd remembered to bring my baseball bat, that would have been useful.
That's remarkable. Is it true that you have become something of an expert on bear attacks?
Yes, I suppose I have. Well, the best thing to do if you're going somewhere where there's a chance of encountering bears is to take something called bear pepper spray. It's just like a pepper spray you might carry to defend yourself from a human attack, except it's specifically designed for use against bears. It's more effective than a handgun in most cases, though neither are deadly to bears. You should never run away from a bear. They will see you as prey and chase, and as they can run at speeds of up to 30 miles per hour, you're not going to get away.
Certainly not. You said that you were attacked by a black bear. Is there a difference in how you should respond to attacks from different kinds of bears?
Well, black bears are very good at climbing trees, and while grizzlies aren't quite so good, they can do it. So this may not be your best means of escape. Grizzlies may leave you alone if you pretend to be dead, whereas with a black bear, your best approach is probably to stand your ground, make a lot of noise, and if they continue to come, then you might have to fight them or even bite them. They'll often run away and look for an easier challenge.
So what you're saying is...
Though I would like to point out that bear attacks are very rare. It's a 1 in 2 million chance, so almost anything you do on an everyday basis is more likely to cause you injury. If you do see a bear, just stay as far away as possible. Also, bears tend to attack individuals and not groups of people, so it's worth bearing that in mind, if you'll pardon the pun.
And on that terrible joke, I'd like to thank Donald Bentham and thank you to all our listeners for bearing with us.
I think that's actually a worse pun than mine, Hazel. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And now we'll head on back to the newsroom. Now listen again. Welcome back. We are now joined by Donald Bentham, who had a remarkable experience on holiday in the United States. We're very lucky to have him here for his first radio interview. In fact, you could say he's very lucky to be here at all. Tell us your story, Donald.
Hello, Hazel. I totally agree. I am very lucky to be here. As you said, I was holidaying in America last summer and I was attacked by a bear.
How did you manage to get away? I can see you have a few scars on your face, but there's nothing else to show that you have been attacked by a bear.
You're right, Hazel. I was very lucky. I was walking in the forest when a black bear came straight at me. It stood up on its hind legs and tried to hit me. I assumed it was right-handed, so I ducked under its arm and punched it in the eyes and nose as hard as I could. The bear suddenly lost interest and walked away. I learnt later that this often happens if you fight a black bear. You can use stones, sticks, anything at all. If I'd remembered to bring my baseball bat, that would have been useful.
That's remarkable. Is it true that you have become something of an expert on bear attacks?
Yes, I suppose I have. Well, the best thing to do if you're going somewhere where there's a chance of encountering bears is to take something called bear pepper spray. It's just like a pepper spray you might carry to defend yourself from a human attack, except it's specifically designed for use against bears. It's more effective than a handgun in most cases, though neither are deadly to bears. You should never run away from a bear. They will see you as prey and chase, and as they can run at speeds of up to 30 miles per hour, you're not going to get away.
Certainly not. You said that you were attacked by a black bear. Is there a difference in how you should respond to attacks from different kinds of bears?
Well, black bears are very good at climbing trees, and while grizzlies aren't quite so good, they can do it. So this may not be your best means of escape. Grizzlies may leave you alone if you pretend to be dead, whereas with a black bear, your best approach is probably to stand your ground, make a lot of noise, and if they continue to come, then you might have to fight them or even bite them. They'll often run away and look for an easier challenge.
So what you're saying is...
Though I would like to point out that bear attacks are very rare. It's a 1 in 2 million chance, so almost anything you do on an everyday basis is more likely to cause you injury. If you do see a bear, just stay as far away as possible. Also, bears tend to attack individuals and not groups of people, so it's worth bearing that in mind, if you'll pardon the pun.
And on that terrible joke, I'd like to thank Donald Bentham and thank you to all our listeners for bearing with us.
I think that's actually a worse pun than mine, Hazel. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And now we'll head on back to the newsroom. That is the end of Part 1, Section B of the listening test. Now turn to Part 2. Listening Part 2. Listen to 3 conversations, and for questions 11 to 20, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation twice. You have 2 minutes to read the questions for Part 2. Conversation 1. Hi, Charlie. I haven't seen you in years. What are you doing these days?
Hi, Beryl. Great to see you. It's been a really long time. I've got a job in the city. I can't complain. It's a good job. It's well paid and, as my wife's expecting another, I've got to stick at it for now.
Congratulations. I didn't even know you had any children.
Yes. Matilda will be 6 next February and George just turned 2. How about you? Are you still with Mike? Any little ones?
Yeah, we're still together. We've got our daughter, Julia, but to be honest, Charlie, Mike and I think she will be our only child and she's enough for us. We should thank you for helping us get together.
You're welcome. I can't believe you guys are still together. It must have been our 4th year of high school when you met.
Yeah, it was the school disco, and you were going out with my friend Amanda.
Wow, Amanda! I wonder what happened to her.
She moved to Canada. She's working as a lumberjack there. You know, working in the forest, cutting down trees, that sort of thing.
Well, I am surprised. At school, she was always so keen on ballet and dancing. But it was clear she wasn't going to be a star.
True. She gave up on that a long time ago. I reckon she's better off where she is now. I don't think she'll ever come back here.
Probably not. Hey, do you remember at school when Nick found those 3 dead mice on the school field and put them in Miss Thornbury's desk?
Oh, she was so shocked. But I saw her a couple of years ago and she said, looking back, it was quite amusing, really. Didn't stop Nick getting kicked out of school, though, did it? To be fair, he probably deserved it.
Yeah, they were fun times. Life's not so much fun now, is it?
I don't know. I didn't think school was so much fun at the time.
Perhaps you're right. I suppose everything looks better in retrospect. Listen, why don't you and Mike come over sometime to meet the family? What's your number?
I'd love that. My number's 0154 732. Now listen again. Hi, Charlie. I haven't seen you in years. What are you doing these days?
Hi, Beryl. Great to see you. It's been a really long time. I've got a job in the city. I can't complain. It's a good job. It's well paid and, as my wife's expecting another, I've got to stick at it for now.
Congratulations. I didn't even know you had any children.
Yes. Matilda will be 6 next February and George just turned 2. How about you? Are you still with Mike? Any little ones?
Yeah, we're still together. We've got our daughter, Julia, but to be honest, Charlie, Mike and I think she will be our only child and she's enough for us. We should thank you for helping us get together.
You're welcome. I can't believe you guys are still together. It must have been our 4th year of high school when you met.
Yeah, it was the school disco and you were going out with my friend Amanda.
Wow, Amanda! I wonder what happened to her.
She moved to Canada. She's working as a lumberjack there. You know, working in the forest, cutting down trees, that sort of thing.
Well, I am surprised. At school, she was always so keen on ballet and dancing. But it was clear she wasn't going to be a star.
True. She gave up on that a long time ago. I reckon she's better off where she is now. I don't think she'll ever come back here.
Probably not. Hey, do you remember at school when Nick found those 3 dead mice on the school field and put them in Miss Thornbury's desk?
Oh, she was so shocked. But I saw her a couple of years ago and she said, looking back, it was quite amusing, really. Didn't stop Nick getting kicked out of school, though, did it? To be fair, he probably deserved it.
Yeah, they were fun times. Life's not so much fun now, is it?
I don't know. I didn't think school was so much fun at the time.
Perhaps you're right. I suppose everything looks better in retrospect. Listen, why don't you and Mike come over sometime to meet the family? What's your number?
I'd love that. My number's 0154 732. Conversation 2.
Hi, Tracy. How's the job at the florist's?
Hi, Martin. Not great. I'm getting allergies because I'm around flowers all the time. My eyes are always watering and my nose is always running. Also, my boss is a right miserable thing. To be honest, though, I wouldn't mind that if the job was a bit better paid. I'm barely covering the bills. I need to find something else.
Well, if I hear of anything, I'll give you a shout. I'm in a bit of a pickle too. I'd appreciate your advice.
What's the problem?
Well, you know I'm in a band. The other guys think we've got a good chance of making a success of it, so they want to move to London.
They must be really confident.
They are. I'm not sure, though. I don't think we're as good as they think we are. Plus, I've got my exams coming up. If I miss those, I won't be able to get into university, and I'll have wasted about 2 years. But if we don't go to London now, we'll probably get forgotten about.
Of course. The music business is like that, isn't it? Why aren't you as optimistic as the rest of your band?
Well, even though they're older than me, this is their first band. I remember feeling just as confident in my first band, but looking back, we weren't really that good. We did a demo tape and the feedback's been okay in London, but it's so competitive. Loads of good bands never make it or do anything. I've also been offered a job in Poland.
I don't think you should go and live there. Think about it carefully. You may not get the opportunity again with the band, and you'll regret not taking it. You can always come back to your studies later. I don't know how much help this is.
Thanks, Tracy. You've been really helpful. I agree with you. Now I know what I'm going to do.
Now listen again.
Hi, Tracy. How's the job at the florist's?
Hi, Martin. Not great. I'm getting allergies because I'm around flowers all the time. My eyes are always watering and my nose is always running. Also, my boss is a right miserable thing. To be honest, though, I wouldn't mind that if the job was a bit better paid. I'm barely covering the bills. I need to find something else.
Well, if I hear of anything, I'll give you a shout. I'm in a bit of a pickle too. I'd appreciate your advice.
What's the problem?
Well, you know I'm in a band. The other guys think we've got a good chance of making a success of it, so they want to move to London.
They must be really confident.
They are. I'm not sure, though. I don't think we're as good as they think we are. Plus, I've got my exams coming up. If I miss those, I won't be able to get into university, and I'll have wasted about 2 years. But if we don't go to London now, we'll probably get forgotten about.
Of course. The music business is like that, isn't it? Why aren't you as optimistic as the rest of your band?
Well, even though they're older than me, this is their first band. I remember feeling just as confident in my first band, but looking back, we weren't really that good. We did a demo tape and the feedback's been okay in London, but it's so competitive. Loads of good bands never make it or do anything. I've also been offered a job in Poland.
I don't think you should go and live there. Think about it carefully. You may not get the opportunity again with the band, and you'll regret not taking it. You can always come back to your studies later. I don't know how much help this is.
Thanks, Tracy. You've been really helpful. I agree with you. Now I know what I'm going to do.
Conversation 3.
Hey, Debbie. Is that Tai Chi you're doing? What are you doing that for?
Well, Giles, it's good for helping me relax. It keeps me healthy, and it's good for flexibility.
How long have you been doing it?
A few months now. I met someone in my yoga class at the gym who introduced me to it.
Still going to the gym, eh?
Yeah. I'm on a bit of a fitness drive. I do this Tai Chi every morning to keep myself stretched and flexible, and I like to go to the gym to run and cycle. My friend Cindy keeps inviting me to play tennis, but it's not really my cup of tea. I've also changed my diet. I stay away from sugar and try to eat as few carbohydrates as possible.
You really are on a fitness drive.
I am. I was watching the telly the other day and saw a programme talking about how just a few alterations in your daily life can help you lose weight and stay healthy. Most of my family are couch potatoes, so that made me determined to get fit. But mainly, it's because I was feeling so lethargic all the time. Not anymore, though. Do you think I'm overdoing it?
I don't suppose so. Anyway, what does it matter? If you're happy doing it, I say go for it.
Thanks, Giles. I got the feeling I might be taking it too far. I was even thinking about planning my diet for a whole month in advance.
Now that might be overdoing it. Personally, I've never seen the point of dieting. I just eat what I like when I like and play football twice a week. That's always kept me in shape. And I think it always will.
To be perfectly honest, Giles, perhaps you should try something else. Now listen again.
Hey, Debbie. Is that Tai Chi you're doing? What are you doing that for?
Well, Giles, it's good for helping me relax. It keeps me healthy, and it's good for flexibility.
How long have you been doing it?
A few months now. I met someone in my yoga class at the gym who introduced me to it.
Still going to the gym, eh?
Yeah. I'm on a bit of a fitness drive. I do this Tai Chi every morning to keep myself stretched and flexible, and I like to go to the gym to run and cycle. My friend Cindy keeps inviting me to play tennis, but it's not really my cup of tea. I've also changed my diet. I stay away from sugar and try to eat as few carbohydrates as possible.
You really are on a fitness drive.
I am. I was watching the telly the other day and saw a programme talking about how just a few alterations in your daily life can help you lose weight and stay healthy. Most of my family are couch potatoes, so that made me determined to get fit. But mainly, it's because I was feeling so lethargic all the time. Not anymore, though. Do you think I'm overdoing it?
I don't suppose so. Anyway, what does it matter? If you're happy doing it, I say go for it.
Thanks, Giles. I got the feeling I might be taking it too far. I was even thinking about planning my diet for a whole month in advance.
Now that might be overdoing it. Personally, I've never seen the point of dieting. I just eat what I like when I like and play football twice a week. That's always kept me in shape, and I think it always will.
To be perfectly honest, Giles, perhaps you should try something else. That is the end of the listening test.